You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Wow, my God.
One of your favorite, one of your favorite teammates. AC, okay, let's. You ready, Ace? Are you ready?
I am so ready. I stayed up all night for this one.
Showtime with Coop is powered by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network.
Well, hey, welcome to Showtime with Coop podcast. And my main man, AT, is on here. But I am so proud and honored to have one of my favorite teammates. I've had the luxury to play with a lot of guys throughout the 80s. And this young man that we're bringing, well, he's not a young man anymore. He's an old guy now.
Forget you, man.
Old guy. A.C. Green, but he was affectionately on our team called Junior. Ace, how you doing?
I'm good, Scoop. Doing good, man. Thank you for letting me be on your podcast, man. I actually feel honored. I really do, man. You called me out and asked me to be on this podcast with you. I'm like, yo, count me in. Thank you, brother.
You were always one of my favorites. I didn't too much like you, and we're going to get into that later. I'll tell you why. But you know
that part's true.
When we're going to get into that. I wore my orange for your Oregon State school. I use the only thing I dress in is purple and gold and red and black. That's New Mexico color. So I wore this for you, Ace. Orange, burnt orange, right?
That's it, brother.
To get us started, tell us about growing up in the Portland area, playing basketball, high school, how you got to Oregon State, and then we're going to take it from there.
All right. So, no, growing up in Portland, Portland's a really small, and especially during my childhood days, a small town, not extremely diverse group. I grew up in what we, at that particular time, was our inner city. It still was a lot of fun just growing up there. Started in baseball, was my favorite sport as a child. And then, you know, I went from baseball to football, and then I sort of just fell and stumbled into basketball, and it was my older brother. I have four kids in the family, and my biggest brother, his name is Lee, he's 4 years older than me, and he was the one that actually introduced me as a child into basketball. And it's one of those things that, you know, being the baby in the family, Scoop, I was that tag along. Mama always said, take your brother with you to the park. You take him with you. So it was one of those. They didn't want to take me, and I didn't want to go. But, you know, the rest was history. And so that was sort of the childhood upbringing. Like I said, falling in love with baseball more than anything else. And I retired from baseball, even though I led the league in home runs.
But why did you retire? Why did you retire from baseball?
Well, okay, I'll tell you why I retired. I led the league in home runs, okay. All right? I was an all-star pretty much most of the years in Little League, of course. And I played every position that you can play. And so I was always one of the top kids. But I realized at the age of 12, I also led the league in getting hit by the ball.
That's why I quit, Ace. I got hit in the leg with a little pop water. That hurt, man.
That was it, man. So I told my coach, we had a coach to player chat in the locker, in the dugout. And it was our last game of the year, and I remember like yesterday. And he says, I said, Mr. Robinson, I said, you know, I can't wait. This is exciting. I said, I'm sad that this is the last game. I said, but I'm excited for next year because we get to go and we're going to go and do it again. We're going to do so good, you know, at our next level. And he says, yeah, it was called Pony League at that time. And he says, yeah, you are going to do great in Pony. And I'm like, my eyes got big. I'm like, well, what are you saying? He's like, well, I'm going to stay here in Little League. And next thing you know, I realized that I was going to be going on my own. I said, I'm done. I led the league in getting hit, and I'm not going to have my favorite coach. I'm out of here. Next thing you know, it ended up only being basketball in my life at that time, and that just got me into high school, at Benson High School there, and then I went on to Oregon State. And at the time, school, when I got out of high school, I remember my senior year, I went to go watch Oregon State during my recruiting time. They said, well, come on down, watch one of our games. Oregon State, the number one ranked team in the country at that time. Yes, in the country, not just the state, the country, because I know you don't like that.
I believe you. Okay, go
ahead. And so who do we play that particular weekend? B. Scott. Beezer at Arizona State. They come into town with Sam Nymphius, with Slammin' Sam, and Kurt Nymphius. Yes. Okay. And the other scoring guard, Paul Williams, was also part of that crew. They came in and waxed Oregon State. Just like, so I was like,
Ace, was Fat Lever on that team?
And Fat. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. And Fat. And it's like, and I'm like, oh my gosh, as we know, all of them went into the league starting, you know, first round draft picks. And so it was one of those things. That's how I sort of got started in the basketball. And next thing, you know, college. And then I ended up with, I was having at my senior year in college for the last 3 or 4 months, I would say that I remember distinctly. My favorite cereal was Wheaties. Okay. I was like, you know, psychologically, I'm like, I want to be a champ. I want to be the best, you know, this, that, and the other. So I'm going to eat the breakfast of champions. And, hey, I'm telling you right now, who's on my box is none but the Showtime. Showtime. I got you on the box, obviously, Cap, Buck. I mean, it was like so crazy. Big Game was on there. Baby B. I mean, it was like, of course, Coach Riley. I mean, I'm having breakfast with the champs, and lo and behold, man, months later, I'm there in the locker room. I'm like, this is crazy.
Now, listen, Ace, before we get to that, let's go back to your senior year at Oregon State. And Jerry West, who's been like a father to all of us, I mean, yeah, he's true. The one that made specific picks for the Lakers. And in 1984, prior to you coming there, we had our, what's the lack of a better word, our demise with the Boston Celtics. For some reason, we just couldn't beat them. I grew up in Los Angeles watching it go down all the time in the 60s. Lakers finally win in the 70s. But now we're revamping. And that goes from the past. The Boston Celtics come, and we lose that 84 series. And Jerry West, I'll never forget this. He came, he said, you know what? I got a good kid for us. And we're like, okay, who is this guy? Because you definitely going to have to prove yourself coming into camp. So he says, A.C. Green. Did you talk to Jerry at that time, or had you met him and had any conversations about him drafting you as a number one pick in 1984-85?
You know, we had a conversation, yes. Okay, we didn't have a lot of conversations, but it was very – he communicated it very well, clearly and distinctly. If I'm available, he's going to get me. And I took him for his word, and I took that to heart, as nervous as it still was and sounded, because I'm like, wow, you know, kind of feeling. But he said he thought I was a perfect fit for the style that you guys are playing, you know, and you wanted to continue to play, and if you wanted to go even more up-tempo. And so we did have a conversation for sure. It was very scary at that.
Now, coming into training camp and getting with the Lakers, and like I've told this story before, my first year back in 79-80, getting with the Los Angeles Lakers, I was drafted, and I remember walking in, and I seen this guy behind me, Kareem, at Loyola Marymount. This before right. They had renovated the gym. Ace, I pissed my pants, man, when I walked in there and I saw Kareem. Sky Hooks, and then Norm Nixon and Jamal Wills came in. Did you piss your pants when you came in, when you saw Magic at all?
No, bro. You was the only one that can piss your pants, bro. I'm sorry. You're the only one, man, that can claim to have that claim to fame, bro. We gonna bow down to you on that.
Hey,
one.
Hey, listen. Hey, what was your thoughts coming into training camp that year?
No. I want to go back. Let me tell you something, man. When we went to the Ocotillo Lounge And the night before, this is at training camp, obviously in Palm Springs.
College of the Desert.
Yes, COD, exactly. Yep. And so I remember just that the eve. First, we had that team meeting, okay, yep. with all of you guys. And so I'm already, like, totally tripped out because now this is my first encounter with you guys, okay? I had all the execs. I had Dr. Buss. I had Mr. West, okay? Coach Riley and the coaches. But now it's the players. And so this is sort of my first introduction to you guys. And so, man, was I nervous? Oh, absolutely. I was definitely nervous just in there, but I felt safe because I knew also the coaches were there. So it was like it was a controlled environment. And then that next day, the very first training camp, then that's when the telltale and the moment of truth came because I remember lacing up my shoes like yesterday. And I'm lacing up before that first practice, of course. And I'm tying my laces. They were already tied. I untied them just to tie them again, okay, to get myself a breather and like exhale, okay, usna, all right. And so, man, as I'm tying them, I'm acting like I'm looking down, but I'm peeping all you guys out because I'm like, I literally said, it's my Wheaties box. It's my Wheaties box. And I saw
I'm you. Loving you even more, AC Green.
I saw you, the three musketeers over there. Oh, they were on the ball. I'm watching you guys do your normal warm-up stuff, which I've come to learn now. That was just you guys, how you guys got warmed up. You, Byron, and Buck. And so I'm like, okay, so I saw you guys. I saw Kurt Rambis and Mitch Kupchak. All right, I saw them on the other side, and they're like two gladiators banging one another, you know, just getting ready. And so I'm watching all this as I'm still acting like I'm tying my shoe. And so, you know, because you guys made it clear the night before, rookies, you are to be seen and not heard. And so I'm like, okay, so I'm tying my shoe, and then all of a sudden, it was like an eclipse. And it was like Jurassic Park all of a sudden because I heard, but I didn't see. And it was like, boom, 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 boom. And as I'm looking at you guys all toward my left, it's the shadow, it's the eclipse coming, and it's Cap. And Cap comes out of my blind spot and he walks right past me, man. And I'm telling you, it was nothing but Jurassic Park. And I'm like, oh, snap, it's Kareem.
You did piss your pants, Ace. You did. Oh, yeah, all right. Ace, listen. This is when, and you listen to Showtime podcast with Michael Cooper, and our guest today is AC Green. Ace, listen, this is when I knew that you had arrived and were going to be a solid Laker player. It was probably like our fifth or sixth practice we were playing. You know, we used to do four across and three across and a lot of running and stuff like that before we actually got into practice. But we finally got to where we were scrimmaging a little bit, and I'll never forget this. And it's a love-hate relationship I have with you. Was I was on the left wing, and they gave me a pass, and you were getting back.
Uh-huh.
I remember driving to the basket, and I said, you know what? I'm getting ready to show him what it's all about. And I went up to slam dunk the basketball. And, Ace, I had you marked. I had you X'd. I had you talked about. I went up, and I went to slam dunk, and you were standing under the basket. That's the thing that impresses me the most. You just jumped straight up in the air with both hands and grabbed my dunk and threw me to the ground. And the thing I hate about that is that you didn't walk over me or say anything to me. You just looked down and go, Coop, let me help you up. I hated that. That's when I knew that you were going to be a significant part of what we wanted to finish accomplishing. And then, again, we go on that next season with you being part of that team, and we defeat the Boston Celtics. What memories do you have about that training camp other than Kareem walking by you and you doing the number one on your pants, but, again, in that practice?
No. Hey, let me tell you, I will give you one distinct moment, another distinct moment I had, actually. So – As you said, as we went through our scrimmaging time, okay, and this was when, for me, this is when I felt I arrived, okay? This was like our second or third day of training camp. And I remember two things happened. One, I made a post move, okay, and it was I basically came across and I did a drop step, and Cap was guarding me. And so I did a spin, drop step, and I wound up getting a layup, Coop, a layup 2 feet from the basket, all right? But I scored, and Kareem was right by me. And so I felt like I scored on Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So I'm like, oh, my gosh, I scored on Cap. I scored on Cap. I scored on Cap. Now, of course, all that's on the internal. No one knew what I was really thinking. That's the first one. The second one, it happened during our 5-on-5. And I remember the ball swung around. Now, of course, I'm on the second team, the second unit, because I could barely get on the court at the time because I'm a rookie. So I'm like, okay, pay your dues. And so we're playing you guys now at this time. And so the ball comes to me on the left wing, and I'm like, I catch with 17 feet. I remember, like yesterday, pump fake. And Kurt Superman was guarding me. So for whatever the reason, he went for my pump fake. And so, woo-hoo, you know, the birdie went flying. All right, so he went flying. And I'm like, oh, my. I'm like, been here, done that. All right, this is my college patented move. All right, 17 feet from the basket, pump fake, defender flies, there goes Rambo. Now, all right, I'm going now to the basket. And I remember I went up, all right, two steps. I got to my two-step plant, all right? So I'm going off one leg and I'm going up. And I remember James comes up toward my left. And so I can see James. And so I go up, and this is before the floater really came in. I was like, okay, I'm going to try and just float this one in there. And then as I'm going in, I got to get there. I got to reach there. Here comes Cap. All right, now obviously we already know how big Cap is, so I'm like, oh, shoot. So already now you know how it is. In midair, you got a split second. So by this time, when I saw Cap even timing his jump, I'm like, I'm going to dunk the ball. And so I knew I was away from James, and I knew I had the angle on Cap. And so I'm about ready. Oh, snap. I know I'm going to be in the starting five after this dunk. I'm like, this is it. Oh, yeah. I got two dunk on both of them. Yes, it's going to be so cool. And I go, and I mean, I left. My arm goes all the way back. It's all the way back in New York. And I'm coming from way back there. And I'm, ugh. And next thing you know, man, I'm serious. From James, James is about right here. And the ball, I'm bringing it. James is here. Cap is about right here. And so as I'm coming just now over, out of nowhere, didn't even know where, but you know, unfortunately, this dude knew how to time stuff. Here comes that, Michael Cooper, last hand.
Oh, payback, baby.
It comes right here, and I mean, let me tell you something. It was boom with the ball, body, ground. That's all I remember.
I love it. Okay, you know what? I'm a senior citizen now, so my memory comes and goes, but I'm glad you brought that to my memory, because now I don't feel bad about you blocking my shot. I got you back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, my boy, AT, tell us something.
Yeah, no, AC, I'm interested in... You know, here you come from, you know, your background, very religious background, joining a Showtime Lakers team that just won the championship, the Forum Club. I mean, how much did you know about what this team was all about? And were you, aside from being a rookie, joining a championship level team that had all-time great players on it, I mean, were you nervous about that environment?
No, actually, I wasn't. AT, it's a great question, too. I wasn't, because actually, Mr. West, that was his first question to me when he was doing the pre-draft. He was like, how are you going to feel in the locker room? You know, are you going to be okay? Because it's going to be conversations like this and discussions of that, that, and the other. And I'm like, I don't see a problem with this, sir. I'm like, I've been in college 4 years.
Right.
And he says, well, he's a son. It's a little bit different than college. But I said, no, I think I'm going to be okay. I think I'm going to be fine. And so there's no precursor, all right, to Showtime. You cannot, there's no prerequisite class you can take. Nobody can tell you, you got to just go and experience it. It's one of those kind of things. And that's pretty much what it was really, really like. And I think it wasn't so much, the glitz and the glamour was there, but the guys were real. Okay. And that's what made it so family oriented. Okay. It made it so real and comfortable for anybody to be in that kind of atmosphere, because the guys just wanted to play ball and they actually cared about you. And it didn't take long for me to really realize that they did not, it wasn't that they actually hated me. They just act like they hated me. It wasn't that they were really picking on me, but they were like, cool. Even though they did not eat with me, it's okay. Cause I was a rookie. I finally realized that, you know, even though they ordered me around to go get newspapers and go get water for them, you know, wouldn't let me get water during timeouts in
right.
practice.
Right.
All those things were because they loved me, and it was just tough love. And it took me some time to realize it, because they did it with a smile on their face. And that's what really
confused. Hey, listen, I want to kind of piggyback off of that a little bit and take you back a little bit further in your upbringing. Because okay. sometimes your upbringing prepares you for certain situations that you right. come into in life. And like you, Ace, I'm from a very religious family. My grandmother raised me. I went to church from the time I was conceived until I was 18, and I left and went away to college where I could be on my own. You, even more so, your parents are really deep into the church. Your father's a pastor, and I know you went to church all your life. Don't you think those type of upbringings really help you through that? And you being very religious, we're going to get into the absence of all the other things that you like, but don't you think those kind of situations help you get set for that situation you arrived in?
No, Coop, I think so. I think so because I think at the same time, you know, you realize that your priorities and what you consider valuable, okay, and some things that you come to identify aren't negotiable, you know, and so who you are, what you believe, how you relate to people, you know, it doesn't matter where you're placed in any certain type of environment, you're going to come with a level of respect. You're going to come with a level of honor and giving people the respect that they deserve. And if it's reciprocal, it is. If they're not on that same wavelength, that's cool, because I've learned you could not let someone, what they're going to do, dictate how you're going to respond. It was like, I'm going to be me regardless. And so that was one of the things that, yes, I think it was, I'm so grateful for that upbringing, you know, and so grateful for the people that really poured into my life, you know, before I got to the Lakers and got to the NBA, because in reality, you know, I stood on their shoulders by the time I got there. I was representing a lot more than just me.
Hey, you know what? And then the one thing that I like to say about you and your presence with the Los Angeles Lakers, you know, being in the NBA is a land of plenty. There's plenty of drugs, plenty of alcohol, plenty of women, plenty of the negative things that you can do. And we partook in those. And one thing with you coming to the team, I'll never forget this. I said, Ace, listen, we're going to the strip club. And he says, I'm not going with y'all. The devil will follow y'all. So eventually, it was a lot less strip clubs, a lot less of the negative things. And I think you brought that presence to the team. And eventually, I think that was one of the saving graces for gluing us and bringing that foundation to the team. So I want to thank you for that, because that's what you brought, and you never wavered from your morals. And you actually implicated your morals onto the team, which really solidified us a lot.
No, I appreciate that, Scoop. I do. And in reality, that's really the way it should be. You know, you don't have to be preachy and it's only your way or the highway. You got to still be adaptable. You got to be relatable. And I think what won me over in the sense was just the fact of, you know, how real, once again, how real you guys were. I mean, we went to dinner, we went to movies, you know, we went bowling, we knew each other's kids' names, we had family picnics. It was just that family atmosphere, man, that it became so real and bigger than basketball. And so that was the thing that just really, I mean, I was blown away more by that than I was by just the actual showtime in the game itself.
Hey, T, had never bowled until this guy came on the team. That was one of my outings. Let's go bowling. Why are you talking about Ace? But this guy was a changer, man. I love AC Green to death. Ace, a couple of little things I'd like to ask you. What's the best book that you've read, other than the Bible? What's the best book that you've read that you really enjoy in, let's say, the last 15, 20 years?
I think one, Stephen Covey's, you know, From Good to Great is probably one that I can think of. And I think, Scoop, I think it's really because it's one that it allows you, it makes you think, okay, and not settle at the same time. Because good can be so, you know, you can grab a hold of good in whatever area, industry that you are seeking after it. It can be in a relationship, you know, it can be just in your business, you know, it can be at school and your grades, you know, it can be whatever you want to put that it factor as, but good can be something that's really attainable and accessible. But also it can be it is the enemy of greatness. And so I'm like, let's go for greatness. You know, that's what you guys taught me. Let's be great. Fame could come in a moment, but greatness comes with longevity. And that's what I learned so much from you guys, you know, and just teaching me coming in to a system that was really obviously great. I mean, a decade of it. It wasn't just like, you know, a one hit wonder. You got to the finals one year. You're like, oh yeah, you know, but it was like a decade of greatness. And then it was just that level of professionalism. And so that's what I think that one book would be. It'll be the Stephen Covey's Good to Great.
You know, it's the reason I asked you that, because again, as a young person, and again, I'm from Pasadena, California, didn't have a lot of money to go anywhere. So reading was my escape to go to different lands and different countries and kind of like experience things. So I always tell kids that reading is fundamental, but right. Reading is very important because it can take you somewhere. Sometimes when your situations at home are bad, it can take you out of those type of situations, okay? Now, what I want to do is get into my, what I call Coop's lightning round. I'm going to ask you, I'll give you five names, and you just have to just tell me a little bit about them, okay? You don't have to spend a lot of time, but just give me a couple of words about them. Karl Malone.
A fierce competitor, extremely strong, and actually a really fun dude.
Our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
The bomb of the bombs, steady as a rock, and just someone that is forever faithful.
Adrian Dantley.
High Sox.
That's mine. Ain't you supposed to use that?
All right. Oh, I got more. Okay. A slow motion mechanical delivery.
John Sally. I give you one, a fool. Okay, go ahead off of that.
Mr. Humor, okay? just a hilarious dude, always wisecracking, you know, but a fun and a good teammate.
Pat Riley.
Someone I'm forever grateful for, to have met, to have taught me, and to spend time with me, and definitely a father figure, and I'm always indebted to.
Okay, I'm going to go a little bit beyond. Kevin McHale.
Kevin McHale, another fierce competitor, loved to take the challenge to try and guard him because he was so good. And I learned. So I call him a good teacher because I learned a lot from him.
Jerry West.
The ultimate of the ultimates. Someone who believed in me. Someone who saw talent that I didn't know I possessed myself, and someone who gave me an unbelievable amount of confidence because he thought that highly of me and I would say use the first draft pick for me. I was gonna say waste one, but he used a draft pick for me.
He didn't waste one. He got a good one there. Last but not least, you know, we lost one of the greatest Laker players in our family, Kobe Bryant.
A heck of a teammate. A fun dude to be around when you got a chance to know him. And ultimately, to me, was just a wonderful family dude. I mean, loved just his being around his family. raising his kids, and that became his ultimate. So he's much props to.
Yeah, gonna be truly missed.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Okay, Ace, my got a couple more bones to pick with you. And this next one is very, very serious and dear to my heart. 1984, 88.
Look, man, I didn't tell that dude to do that.
Never heard it yet. 1985, 86, we are going and we're playing the New York Knicks. And at that time, Ace, I had the most games, consecutive games played. I was like at 560-something games straight. And I was very proud of that, very proud of that. And you were up and coming. You were the same type of player playing, but it was – you were probably like at 300 from me. And this particular game, playing the Knicks, and the late Pat Cummings had been – they've been talking in the newspaper about him being traded. So the Knicks wanted to get rid of him and this and that, and we were playing them, and we were kicking their butts pretty good. And I know Pat was trying to guard you and this and that, but anyway, you go to the basket, and I believe he fouled – we fouled
– Laid me out.
One of the two. But he turned around – and during that scuffle, he turned around and he slapped you, or he swung at you. And I don't know if he hit you because he swung over my head and you were behind me. And when I turned around, you were laughing. And I says, okay, I know what that laugh is about, because AC being real religious, you know, it's like you hit somebody, hit your cheek, you turn and you let him hit the other cheek. Well, I wasn't about to let that happen, because I was there to protect you, and I went at Pat Cummings, and I took it, and both of us flipped over that front row and at the forum. We heard this old man hurt his leg, but we were fighting, and anyway, the skirmish ends. I get a technical, and I go out of the game, and Mr. Stern sends me a note and says, Michael Cooper, you can't play in the next game, and that broke my streak. And I was mad at you because you went on to be the Iron Man. That's your handle right here. You played 1,192 straight games after that. And I like to say, you know what? I might have broke mine, but I definitely kept AC Green's intact. And I'm mad at you about that. But how does that feel to play that many consecutive games through pain, through not feeling well, through just the whole thing? For me at that time, it was a record that I really held close to my heart, because I always wanted to know. I wasn't a great player coming out of college, but I just knew that I came to work every single day. And now with you setting that record right there, probably won't be beaten by anybody. But how did you feel about that? 1,192 straight consecutive games, Ace. That's damn good.
Well, you thank you, Scoop. Thank you. I really do want to go back to the fight part, because that was so you to protect your teammates. Because that, yeah, because like you said, the late Pat Cummings, he was ready to do something. That's for sure. He had a little grudge going into that game. So, but thank you. Most importantly, thank you for always having my back.
Always.
Thank you for running through me many a times to get to somebody else. But it was that mentality, and more importantly, that mindset, okay, that I noticed that really helped develop the Iron Man, okay? Because it was one of those things that you were relentless, okay? And everything, the attributes you just listed, you were relentless, you were committed, you're dedicated to no end. Every summer, you always tell me, you know, we always had that summer challenge to one another, who gonna come back and run the longest on the treadmill. And so then I leave and go to Oregon. The only thing I'm thinking about, Coop gonna try and beat. He's gonna try.
Hey, you know what? Hold on, Ace. I'll interrupt you. That was some serious stuff there, man. We used to really compete. This guy could run forever on that treadmill with that thing stuck in his mouth. I'm sorry, Ace.
No, you're right, though. You're right, but it was that competition, it bred that whole imagery of what the, what and who the Iron Man really is. And it was only out of competition that you can arrive and strive for greatness, because good would have been just, okay, I want to meet whatever the average needs to be, or I'm just going to try and, you know, be as good as the last player or the player in my position before. But when you're used to trying to go after greatness, you know, you had to have a model. You had to have somebody that you saw going after and trying to lay out that the footsteps before you. And that's the thing. And I would honestly, I would say that was the blessing of coming to Showtime when I did, because I had you guys who were great pioneers and role models, you know, to walk after. So that was really, really cool.
Ace, you broke into the starting lineup, and you become that power forward, that unique power forward, because before you came, it was like Lonnie Shelton, big 6'9", 6'10", right. big power forward. You changed that and really made it a totally different kind of power forward, very mobile, could get in there and bang with a little bit, but still could step out and hit that jump shot. So of your three championship rings, which one is more important to you? I mean, they're all important, but does one hold more significant over the other?
You know, Scoop, I think because how we are wired in our DNA, you know, we've always been about family. We've always been about teaching. We've always been about bringing somebody else along on that journey with you. And, you know, that's what you guys did for me, coming into the league and teaching and showing me, and then, you know, allowing me to win and participate in confetti coming down and multiple times, you know, back to back at that. And so I would say, because of what I learned in Showtime and then coming back with my new millennial Lakers, that whole, obviously Phil, Shaq, Kobe, Robert, Derek, all those guys, That was a special group, because we didn't know how good we were at that time. Okay. I knew the DNA of a championship team thanks to you guys. All right. But I knew I didn't see it there at the beginning of the season. And so it was one of those things that I took what I learned from you guys and tried to help interject that and inject it strongly into our guys there, into the culture, and more importantly, to the mindset of our young superstar athletes who were fun getting numbers. And you and I both know you get all the points you want, but if you're taking L's at the end of the day, you know, you're just another good player.
Exactly. And Ace, you know what? You have a record that won't get broken, I don't think. You're the only player in NBA history to win a championship at two different arenas. You won one at the Forum, and then you won one at Staples Center.
No, you're right. And I feel really honored and super blessed by that. I mean, it's not like a whole lot I had to do with it. I mean, it's timing is so much. And I feel blessed, honestly. I really, really do, because being now here and transplanted as, you know, a Southern California guy, it's so cool to know that you won a championship in both of those historical buildings. And I tell you, man, that's a lot of fun. I get a smile every time I think about that. I go even to the Staples Center now. I remember that confetti coming down. I remember what it was like, you know, that very first time of getting a chance to win on that court and beat the Pacers. And next thing you know, we are now the world champs.
Hey, T, you know what? AC has another first, too. He's the only player that wore a Jerry curl. So when he's talking about the confetti coming down and getting caught in his hair, I love you, Ace. I had to throw that one in there. Showtime with Coop Podcast. You can get us on Spotify or Apple. CLNS Media is my partner. Anything you want to add to that, Jerry Crow, Ace? Jerry Crow comment. Hey, listen, AC Green, one of the toughest defensive players in the NBA at that time. I like to think I was the best guard defender. AC, for sure, on our team and through the league, was a good defensive player. And through his defensive approach to the game, became an all-star player. But, Ace, what I want to ask you, who's the top five best offensive players that you had to go against? Your top five.
Wow, Scoop. Now, are you talking? Let me make sure I understand. Are you saying I guard it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You guard it.
Okay. I would say Carl would be one of them from a
Carl Malone.
Carl Malone, yeah. Yes, he would be one. I would say Dominique Wilkins was another.
Human highlight was a good one.
Yeah, he definitely was. I didn't, because somebody else on this screen was guarding the counterpart. I would say Kevin McHale would be another because you had obviously Larry on the other side, so I didn't have to worry about him.
What made him difficult to guard, Ace Kevin? Long arms, big high waist, high butt.
So many moves.
All those things, and honestly, he had good footwork for a big guy, very methodical, mechanical, and kept the ball so high that he used. You know, it was hard to block out because he knew how to leverage, and he had long arms. Okay, and then on the other side of the rebounding, he kept the ball up, and so sometimes you felt like your little nephew playing against you, and he just held the ball up all the time out of your reach.
Hey, Ace, did he talk trash to you?
You know, actually, no. Every single person on that team, the Boston Celtics, they did not talk trash to me because they only talked trash to you because they hated you.
Hey, listen, Larry Bird was talking on my side, man. I had a muzzle on him. That's another story for another time. You owe me one more player, Ace, one more player.
All right, so one more player that was extremely hard and tough. You know, actually, I'm going to say Rasheed Wallace.
He was
another because he was one of the guys that I guarded on a regular basis that stepped out to the 3-point line, and you had to really respect that because he actually could start making those shots, and so he would be another one. So is that five or that four?
That's five good ones too, Ace.
Yeah. All right. So I've had an honorable mention of Chris Webber's, but he's on my honorable mention list.
Okay, we can throw him on there. What made Chris so hard to guard?
Because Chris, you know, Chris. By that time, he was finding his game. You know, he was finding what he can do and where his sweet spots were in the game. And so he can hit that 18-footer if he got going. And so now you got to, you know, worry about that. And then always down low, he had little up and unders, little herky-jerky type moves. He wasn't going to overpower you, but he just had a little combination of inside out, and that made it a little bit tough.
We're talking to the Iron Man, AC Green, averaged 9.6 a game, 7 rebounds a game, only passed the ball for average 1.1 assists, so he wasn't passing much, and he averaged 28 minutes through them great Showtime eras. Ace, a couple more questions. You listen to Showtime with Coop podcast, insightful BS by legends. That's what this is, Ace. Insightful BS.
Like that. Okay,
so we're having a little bit. But Ace,
just give me your thoughts and experiences and that perspective, and you know, in the finals, playing against Jordan, both with the Lakers and the Suns, and kind of that, you know, because that's the passing of the torch in some ways from the '80s NBA with the Showtime and the Celtics, then to MJ's Bulls.
Yeah, the you know that especially the Magic Michael. That first championship that they won, okay, that was extremely, extremely hard series, obviously for us. I mean, we won the first game, okay, but just the whole preparation for that contest and knowing, you know, we knew that MJ wanted a championship and he was going to explode. But it was like in anything, and Coop would be the first to tell you, it's the supporting cast that you always got to worry about.
That's what I was gonna say, Ace.
You know, and so it's one of those things that, as funny as it was, and watching Michael do his thing, and you know, and all the things that happened inside of that championship, their very first championship, you know, honestly, it was those other guys that he set up for open shots. You know, he took all the attention, and he's definitely scored his. But everyone played their role so well that you actually had a chance to really see it and felt that you were really playing against a real powerful system, not just a player.
Craig Hodges, Steve Kerr, Harvey or Horace Grant, whichever one was there, Bill Cartwright. He had a good, and it took some years to get that, but when you got those type of players, you have the Michael Coopers, A.C. Green, Kurt Rambis, people like that around, it is easier to watch and it's fun to watch. And when you get caught in a situation like that, did you feel like you're almost helpless, Ace, a little bit as far as playing against that great Bulls team?
No, you know what, because I always trusted our system. I relied on our guys, okay? Now, and it's a little bit different because now that Bulls series, okay, I'm at the end of the – we almost are past the Showtime era, okay, from that standpoint. So if I had our Showtime guys, all right, in our system that we knew how to cover each other's back, we played position – we took away a person's sweet spot and made them start 3 to 5 feet out further than they wanted to. And by the time they made the move to get to where they wanted to be, then help was always going to be there. And everybody was rotating on, as we call, on a string at that time. And so it was a little bit different, okay, with that 90 team, okay, 90 series. And so it wasn't helpless. But I honestly felt the difference, and I'm sure Magic felt the difference, you know, also. And I think Baby B was on that team also that particular year, and James.
You know, that's the joy of a decade of basketball. You know, you had the Lakers in 2010 doing the things that they did, but that's the fun part. And sometimes it's kind of hurtful when you're on that end where the change is being made and you're getting beat, but it's also something that makes you really cherish the moments that we went through as a certain group. And that's what I was going to ask you next. Business-wise, what do you got going on?
From a business side, in the esports, I'm trying to help kids get more and learn more about the gaming aspect itself. They love it. They're always obviously into it, but there's a lot more to it. And so I'm looking forward to continue building a brand within the Saponic.com, and people can find out more about sort of what that really is. And outside of that, you know, you are constantly now, I think I'm Mr. Zoom, okay? Everything.
You have a green screen, Ace? Do you have a green screen?
Brother, I got a green screen. I got a pink screen. I got a blue screen.
I'm getting me one. Hey, Ace, you know what? You've been listening to Showtime Podcast with Coop. Ace, thank you so much, because Ace has been on Insightful BS by the Ledgers. thank you, man. It's been a true pleasure, man, and I hope to have you back sometime in the near future. Stay safe. Any last words you got to say to us?
I know you're going to now give me some food, right? I know you can't, take me to a restaurant, but you can at least send that takeout order to me now, right?
I got you covered. Chester Jr. What else we call you? Panda Hands. AC Green. Oh, love you, man. You take care, Ace.
Love y'all too, man. Appreciate it.
CLNS History is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network.